Reading this morning from Canto 2, Chapter 3, entitled Pure Devotional Service, text number 20. Section of chapter 3 is the concluding section. It's a section in which Shukadeva Goswami is he's described already the superiority of devotional service above all other processes. And like in an ecstatic way, his happiness is so astounding that to consider anything other than devotional service is in the last verses he's dismissing or decrying anything other. In Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami writes that bhakti is exclusive. That where love is given to the personality of Godhead, it's exclusive, it's very focused, and therefore shelter is not taken elsewhere, or the energy of the swimming pool of life is not directed towards other things. So, in one sense, that's what these verses are doing. That if there's any hesitation or contemplation other than pure devotional service, he's cutting off those channels. When one engages in devotional service, it should be very focused, very strongly rendered, keeping the bhakti of the inner. Just a little bit the context, one famous verse from this third chapter. There's a number of often quoted verses, but just a few verses preceding text 20 is this one where both by the rising and setting of the sun it decreases the duration of life of everyone, except when he utilizes the time by discussing the topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. So that's text 17 of chapter 3. It sets the mood for the rest of the verses of the chapter. Devotional service, exclusively rendered unto the personality of Godhead, has a virtue that nothing else can compare to. The rising and setting of the sun draws that person closer to Krishna, because the activities done throughout the day, day in and day out, are the hearing and chanting of the topics of Krishna, which bring one to Krishna. And if that's neglected, then what is achieved? One's duration of life has been decreased by one day, and then another day, So each day, progressively, is drawing one closer to death. Whereas for a devotee, each day that passes, one is being drawn closer and closer to immortality. Very interesting. Mortality and immortality. Just down the hearing and chanting process, the Bhagavad Mark. So then, what about somebody that doesn't? What about the values of persons that want to live a long duration of life? Because they're not thinking about eternal life, they're thinking long duration of life. Don't trees have a long duration of life? Well, yes, trees have a long duration of life, but they don't breathe. Do not the bellows of a blacksmith breathe? Well, the bellows of the blacksmith breathe, but they're not enjoying life by sexual and sensual pleasures. Do not the beasts discharge semen and eat? Then the hogs, dogs, camels, asses verse. Svavid vra hoshtra karai. Men who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, praise those men who never listen to the pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from all evils. So that's been discussed. Now, text 20. One who has not listened to the messages about the prowess and marvelous acts of the Personality of Godhead, and one who has not sung or loudly chanted the worthy songs about the Lord, is to be considered to possess ear holes like holes of snakes, and a tongue like the tongue of a frog. Not very complimentary. I'll read the purport. These purports are classic. They're repeated over and over again. It's like poetry. In the purports, Prabhupada has used alliteration, he's used metaphors, he's used similes, although it's prose, it's just so beautifully composed. And therefore devotees like to read these purports again and again and again, just from the literary embellishment point of view. And, of course, the message is very powerful. Here's what Prabhupada writes in his purport. Devotional service to the Lord is rendered by all limbs or parts of the body. First point. So devotional service is Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. All limbs, all the parts of the body. It is the transcendental dynamic force of the spirit soul. That's another definition of devotional service. So, first definition, engaging the senses in service of the master of the senses. Another definition, it's the transcendental dynamic force of the spirit soul. So, although we're using the body, what's driving the body, in the case of devotional service, it's the transcendental, dynamic force of the spirit soul. So it's very powerful. Therefore, a devotee is engaged 100% in the service of the Lord. This phrase 100%, later on, he uses the word in toto, use the word completely absorbed, so this Tivra Bhakti message is being repeated in a thematic way. The devotional service isn't casual. It's very active, very concentrated, very dynamic, 100%. 100% devotional service doesn't mean that's for sannyasis and brahmacharis. 100% means 100% for anyone. Sensual power, fully engaged in service to Krishna, with transcendental dynamic force of the spirit soul. That's what devotional service is. Then, one can engage in devotional service when the senses of the body are purified in relation with the Lord. So how do the senses that are materially contaminated become purified? Connecting the senses to the Supreme Pure. So the senses become purified, and through that purification process, devotional service means engaging purified senses in the advanced stage. And one can render service to the Lord with the help of all the senses. The second time he's making the point. All the limbs, all the parts of the body, all the senses engaged in service to the Lord. As such, the senses and the action of the senses are to be considered impure or materialistic as long as they are employed only in sense gratification. The purified senses are engaged not in sense gratification, but in service of the Lord in toto. Same senses, differently directed. The directing of the senses is from consciousness, a conscious choice of serving the Lord, and the conscious choice of not pandering to the demands and dictates of the senses, but extending the senses for service to Krishna only. The Lord is the supreme with all senses, and the servitor, who is part and parcel of the Lord, also has the same senses. Service to the Lord is the completely purified use of the senses as described in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord imparted instructions with full senses, and Arjuna received them with full senses. And thus there was a perfect exchange of sensibility and logic, a sensible and logical understanding between the master and the disciple. Now here Prabhupada is using, almost like a poetic way, sense and sensibility and logical. So the direct meaning of sense means that the organ, the instrument for perception, that's the senses. Working senses, knowledge acquiring senses. Then he's using the word sense, kind of like a repeat of the same word, but in this case with a different meaning. Sensible, meaning based upon reason and logic. So that's the mind. The mind reasons and constructs things with some kind of logic. So, although it's on the sensual platform, the senses serving Krishna, the master of the senses, behind the senses there's sensible and logical contemplation. perfect exchange of sensible and logical understanding between the master and the disciple. Then he speaks about the understanding, spiritual understanding. There's nothing like an electrical charge from the master to the disciple, as foolishly proclaimed by some propaganda mongers. Then he goes back. Everything is full of sense and logic. Reason. Here's sense having these two meanings, the instrument of gathering knowledge, and the mind that considers why should I, how should I, what's the meaning. Both, in other words, it's a double sense of the same word, a double meaning of the same word, but both faculties are to be employed in devotional service. That's the message Prabhupada wants his reader to receive. We do things practically, at the same time inwardly we contemplate very thoughtfully, very carefully, very reasonably, very logically. Devotional service doesn't abandon logic and reason. And certainly devotional service doesn't mean sense gratification, while it does mean engagement of the senses. Everything is full of sense and logic. And the exchange of views between the master and the disciple is possible only when the reception is submissive and real. So now he's introduced in this purport another component, very important, because he said it's only possible to get the sense and logic, to get that proper consciousness behind the activity of serving Krishna, when the disciple is in a submissive mood. And there's a real connection established between the disciple and the spiritual master. Only possible. This full of sense and logic experience is only possible when reception is submissive and real. Repeats the point. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said that one should receive the teaching of Lord Chaitanya with intellect and full senses, so that one can logically understand the great mission. It's not one minus the other, or vice versa. The thoughtfulness behind devotional service and the activity of devotional service, both need to be there. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevana. The senses serving the master of the senses. So it's practical, Prabhupada speak this way, making the same point. It's practical activity. Some people think of bhakti as some kind of sentimentalism. No, it's not some kind of sentimentalism. It's practical activity. I mean, explicitly, it's senses and objects of the senses meeting one another and doing something, practical activity. The execution of the contemplation of devotion is the expression of the devotion, devotional service with senses. At the same time it's with senses, this section of the third chapter of the Bhagavatam, Canto 2, is telling us it's not sense gratification. It's not sensual attraction. Although it may look like, just like playing musical instruments or anything, cooking, dancing, singing. There's practical working, there's practical activity. So side by side, someone's playing a musical instrument, someone's playing a the example given in the Bhagavad Gita is two factory workers side by side. One can be in Krishna consciousness and the other can be in material consciousness. So sensual activity is core to devotional service. But it's the very carefully understood purpose and consciousness of devotional service behind that sensual activity that makes it devotional service. Otherwise, then, you know, the criticism may have some merit that's just sentimental. What's the difference between this worker and that worker, this musician and that musician, this dancer and that dancer, this singer? You know, somebody that's you're saying you're in devotional service, but isn't that just same thing? Just your belief, your faith, your sentiment. But no, it's not just faith, belief, sentiment. It's very reasonable, very logical, very sensible, and that is understood and it's attained when the reception is submissive and real. And when, say it the other way around, when submission to receiving this Krishna consciousness is activated, it will be demonstrated by practical activity. So we can go in either direction. The practical activity backed by the proper consciousness. When the proper consciousness is there, the practical activity will be there. That's a demonstration of it. The full intellect and full senses. In this way, one is to receive the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So this is a very nice paragraph. Devotional service should be very thoughtfully approached and thoughtfully taken up and executed. And with vigor, with transcendental dynamic force of the spirit soul driving it. In the next paragraph, Shukadeva Goswami's words about the snake and the tongue of the frog are elaborated. This is the circumstance of someone that does not heed this message, and due to their impure state, their life is just absorbed in sense gratification. Here's Prabhupada's words. In the impure state of a living being, various senses are fully engaged in mundane affairs. If the ear is not engaged in the service of the Lord by hearing about him from Bhagavad Gita Srimad Bhagavatam, certainly the holes of the ear will be filled with some rubbish. Therefore, the messages of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam should be preached all over the world very loudly. That is the duty of a pure devotee who has actually heard about them from the perfect sources. Many want to speak something to others, but because They are not trained to speak on the subject matter of Vedic wisdom. They are all speaking nonsense, and people are receiving them with no sense. Just listening to this and viewing this interview with Srila Prabhupada in 1975 in Los Angeles, and forget what the exact question was. The question was, Swamiji, are you helping your followers to come to the conclusion that one should find the Guru within? And Prabhupada said, where is that stated? I don't know, I've heard it. Where is that stated? Guru within. Then he went down the path of saying, there are persons who have come to this country with that teaching. teaching that you don't need a teacher. Do you see the deception? They're coming and teaching you don't need a teacher. Then someone else volunteered, yes. And one has written a book saying you don't need books. So then the interviewer wanted to go on. Prabhupada said, I want to know what you think. Is this not rascaldom? And they wouldn't say rascaldom. It was contradictory. And when you speak, you're a teacher, you speak contradictory. What is that? That is rascal. You're taking the position of teacher and saying, you don't need a teacher. You're writing books and saying, you don't need to read books. So, many people want to speak to others, but they're not trained to speak on the subject matter of Vedic wisdom. They're speaking all nonsense. And people are receiving them with no sense. So this, Prabhupada was making this point. Because persons don't know, they don't even take the time to discriminate. Now certainly if we know, then that gives us strength of discrimination. This is not real. Very frustrating and disturbing for a transcendentalist to see how the illusory energy dupes, bewilders the average person. There are hundreds and thousands of sources for distributing mundane news of the world, and people in the world are also receiving it. Similarly, the people of the world should be taught to hear the transcendental topics of the Lord, and the devotees of the Lord must speak loudly so that they can be heard. Then, the frogs loudly croak, and with the result, that they invite the snakes to eat them. Saturday evening. They have a pond, and they said it was like a thank you kind of an event. What do you call those things?
Appreciation.
Yeah, appreciation dinner. Appreciation evening. So after the whole evening was over, it was a nice evening, and we went outside for prasadam. Fantastic prasadam, I was told. And there was a frog who was under the porch, and he was really making such a racket. I thought, maybe it's... I didn't know what it was. But they said, no, run to there,
and think over them. Really, really loud, like the whole orchestra in one guy.
So the people were talking, and the frog was making his, he was talking, he was making his sound. So what's the benefit? Is there particular difference of benefit between the frogs croaking and the person speaking? If the frog is just making his sound, he's just inviting, here I am. Although it's the dead of night, the serpent can then know where his prey is and swallow the frog. So, like the text 17, where the passing of each day and night is simply drawing one closer to death. So this is an elaboration on that theme. This power of speech is to be used in a positive way to bring one and others, oneself and others, closer to the position of Krishna. And that's by speaking Krishna Katha. And if the tongue isn't used, then it's like the croaking of the frog, inviting death, come and catch me. The human tongue is especially given for chanting the Vedic hymns and not for croaking like frogs. The word asati, used in this verse, is also significant. Asati means a woman who has become a prostitute. A prostitute has no reputation for good womanly qualities. Similarly, the tongue, which is given to the human being for chanting the Vedic hymns, will be considered a prostitute when engaged in chanting some mundane nonsense. So mentioned in the verses both the tongue of the frog, but also the ear holes that hear those sounds are like the holes of snakes. Prabhupada has elaborated on this very, not here in the purport, but elsewhere with great alacrity. He's described that in agricultural fields, one will find many holes. And he said, you know, go on the beach and you'll find many holes. But particularly in agricultural fields, many holes. And holes means some living entities inside. And the snakes come along and the mouse, the field mouse that has made the hole, the snake goes down the hole, eats the mouse, and lives in the hole. And the ears, similarly, that hear these other sounds, they just provide an entrance for the poison-like serpent of mundane sound to enter the ear and contaminate consciousness. The ear that is used in that way is no better than the holes of snakes. So snakes don't have ear holes, but there's holes in the ground, and there's holes of snakes. So our vitality will be taken away. Certainly the purpose of human life will likewise be taken away just by hearing of mundane sounds. And there's abundant mundane sounds. In case one, there's so many channels for propagating mundane news. One of the disturbing things about travel is
whenever there's a lounge, they got to have a TV going where there's blah, blah, blah stuff all the time. You know, from this side and from that side, it's speakers all around where you are. You can't get away from it. And then the car ride to the airport, you keep the windows down and people are blasting sounds out of their cars. The quality of those sounds, every third car is rap music, and it's no wonder with people hearing that stuff all day long, anger, that they're angry people. And they do violent things. So Shukadeva Goswami is condemning one who doesn't use this human form of life to hear and chant the topics of Krishna. Having previously described the virtues of Krishna Katha and that being a symptom of pure devotional service, one who doesn't utilize this human form of life is acting like a living entity in a lower species. So the language sounds very condemning and harsh, but it's to help us understand. Let us keep far away those misuses of the instrument for speaking, the tongue, the instrument for hearing, the ear, primary instruments for devotional service, hearing and chanting about Krishna. Any discussion?
I have a question in respect of I guess engagement of the senses. That, you know, there are two aspects of it. One is that you actually, you know, actively go out and do something, and the second is like do something mundane. So you know, you engage your senses in doing something in the game. You go out and, you know, let's say, you know,
whatever it is.
So you make a conscious, you know, attempt to go and do that.
Yeah.
And the second is like you consciously try and do something that is spiritual. And, I mean, the first one seems to be relatively, I guess, easier to control. That, you know, you kind of decide not to do it, so you don't do it. But the second is kind of more difficult. That, you know, you say, okay, let me, whatever time I have, let me go and, you know, read or do kirtan or one of the other things. So is there a different technique
Well, I would, a comment is if you're not consciously choosing activities of devotional service, then 100% aptly for certain by default, then it's going to be activities of sense gratification. Not a fair position. So, the curtailing of going out and doing some sense gratification may have its, you know, the obvious for a devotee, like cut-off point to draw the line, I'm not going to go do that, I'm not going to go do that, I'm not going to go do a whole bunch of other things. But then there's this other area that's not, if it's not explicitly doing this for Krishna, doing that for Krishna, doing for Krishna, extending the senses for the satisfaction of Krishna, the master of the senses, then there's this other area that is that devotional service or is that sense gratification? And if it's not for Krishna,
at best, it's mixed. So the technique is certainly one has to consciously choose Krishna. So let's just take a gray area, could be gray area, and that's recreation. And I've heard some very interesting renderings of Krishna describing one should be moderate in one's eating, sleeping, work, and recreation. So, in moderation, so, you know, for a devotee, what about recreation? What do we do that's Krishna conscious recreation? So the thought behind the activity is pleasing Krishna, but at the same time it's recreation. Yeah. So it's very easy to say, you know, just to be, you know, out to lunch and it's recreation time. It's like no Krishna. That's not Krishna consciousness. But the same if there's some activity where purposely, let's say yoga, nice, you know, easy one to consider. Someone can do yoga for different reasons. If the reason is this will help me over a period of time if I do this, to maintain health so I can go on serving Krishna in a proper way. I just started a little practice of there's a devotee with the Brooklyn Temple that has a pass at the YMCA and we go every now and then to go swimming. And my purpose is very clear. You know, I need to do some kind of exercise. If I don't do some kind of exercise, my health suffers. I've not been doing exercise in quite some time. So, it's very purposeful. It's recreation, but it's very purposeful. It's not something else. So the technique is the conscious choice behind this activity. There should be, this is for Krishna. With full senses, so we have organs for procreation, and if it's for Krishna, that's one thing. If it's not for Krishna, then it's not done. What does for Krishna mean? For propagating God conscious children? That's the purpose. And otherwise, so, you know, that's the criterion. The for Krishna choice. Automatically it takes care of the other.
Hey, I think the principle is kind of, I guess it's clear and simple. I guess that the challenge is in the
execution.
In the execution, because and personally speaking, there, you know, I find there's a shortage of recreation activities that that you can actually truly, honestly, and this is just my own personal realization, say that this is for Krishna. And when you go to the temple. And there's kirtan going on, and that is obviously something that is that is devotional service. And then there's also the desire to go and talk with the devotees, and not all of that is always centered around Krishna.
Well, you can make it centered around Krishna. If conversation starts going in other directions, then you bring it back. It's
certainly doable. Those shelter exchanges, that's also part of Krishna consciousness, as kirtan is part of Krishna consciousness, as deity worship is part of Krishna consciousness. So make it Krishna centered, certainly can be done. And if any one of us, our focus is mundane, it's going to attract mundane. If our focus is devoted to Krishna, that's the conversation. I have the experience of being in a temple and just walking to go from one part of the temple to the other part of the temple, and all of a sudden people stop. What's the indication? They were talking something that's not appropriate to be spoken before someone who's serious about Krishna consciousness. So if you're absorbed in the proper way, it attracts, and you're absorbing the different, it attracts, like attracts like. So we don't need to be rigid kind of thing, but devotional. It attracts devotional conversation, exchanges. Okay, the verse, the sentence in the purport reads, everything is full of sense and logic, and the exchange of views between the master and the disciple is possible only when the reception is submissive and real. So what is it? What does real mean? And what does connecting with the spiritual master mean? When people ask that question, how to best respond to that? So when the reception is submissive and real, there can be other kinds of relationships or exchanges where it's formal, but there's no transformation of heart, no transformation of consciousness, no awakening of deeper Krishna consciousness. It's elaborate on it. So we've seen relationships, and we've experienced relationships that are superficial. Someone says some humble statement, I'm the most fallen, kind of statements of humility, and yet their behavior is the opposite. Or nuances and social exchanges where courtesies are spoken, but it's the whole dynamic, the whole vibration of the exchange is not that at all. So where it's real is it's like on the soul level. One of the things that can be said about, well, how do you tell the difference You tell the difference, mentioned during the class, you tell the difference by the consistent practical quality of service. When it's on the spirit, when something is on the spiritual platform, it's not circumstantial. In this moment, my behavior and speech are a certain way. The next moment, 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, it's something else altogether. Or one day it's this, and the next day it's that. When the spiritual platform is reached, there's consistency. It's of the same quality all the time. Always a diapakiyata. And there's genuine spiritual feeling that the person is experiencing. The qualities of their speech and behavior is naturally pleasing. It's hard to describe in one sense because it's subjective. But then, you know, the objective things are what I'm trying to describe. The qualities of a devotee are consistently exhibited in the character of one where the exchange between guru-disciple is when reception is submissive and real. It's the spiritual, the characteristics of a Vaishnava are always there. They're not sometimes there and then sometimes not there. They're always there. Subjectively is another thing. One of the contrasting what's not real that Prabhupada is pointing to is where the exchange is like electrical discharge. Prabhupada told the story of seeing on stage one spiritual master and his student, and he was going to transfer his spiritual energy to the student, and the whole drama, and he walks over to the student, he places his hand on the head of the student, and he starts to vibrate like a big charge of electricity is passing through him, and he collapses to the floor, and the student becomes, you know, charged with electricity, and that's not real. So what's real is it's with great, using the same language that Prabhupada is presenting here, with great care, with great logic, with sense, with reason, with careful understanding, and subjectively one understands and accepts in a submissive manner. Then that's a real connection, and it's, the real connection is demonstrated by performing according to that understanding in a consistent manner. Then there's actually transformation. There's actually a real connection that's established. It's sustainable, durable. It's not an act. It's real. Consistent, steady in its exhibition. You have some thoughts on this? Yeah.
absorption, meditation, samadhi. People like want it, they're very sincere, the connection seems real for that moment, but then the focus is lost because there's no absorption. Can that connection be real? And then
yes.
Yes.
Yes. We have to have that experience. I mean, and here's a common thing that I hear. You know, spending some time in some place, and you know, a seminar or something or something or something. At the end, like one of the universal questions is, "How, Maharaj? How can we maintain this? You know, this absorption." So the absorption is real. But if it dissipates, it commonly dissipates. So it doesn't mean it wasn't a real connection, it wasn't a real experience. Purification is gradual. It, you know, our contaminations settle in again. One devotee uses this phrase, the bungee cord phenomena. So the bungee cord, it stretches, but then because it's elastic, you leave it alone, it collapses again. So, we have a tendency to revert to our conditioned ways, and therefore sustained practice, because we're convinced in the ways of devotional service, that practice becomes, then it becomes our second nature. But it also means that purity. Another very important component of sustaining attentiveness is this point of gratitude I'll describe. If you have a bucket that has holes in it, however many times you fill it up, the bucket's going to leak out. So if we receive an experience and we're feeling full from that experience, how to keep that full feeling. So if there is a deep sense of gratitude that then expresses itself in the form of sharing that same experience with others, recreating that same experience in relationship with others, the fullness tends to stay. Now there's variety, there's variegatedness in the spiritual world. This is something that recently happened. From the Japa retreat that we had in Maryland, and then following that Japa retreat that we had together in California, some of the same things that were very inspiring and absorbing in those two retreats, I found practically item by item that we were doing was just recreating that same experience for others, including even, you know, Vivian Barr's recital of chanting slokas is the way that she had learned from Dravida. So I was very inspired, it was very moving. So then I asked some of the devotees in Chicago to learn from Dizimar. So they did it. You know, they did video conferencing and they learned and they performed. And it was very moving. You know, so experience, just recreating the experience
sharing with others out of an expression of gratitude for having received something very wonderful. And that act of giving with feeling that which one has received sustains the attentiveness and sustains the mood. Like one devotee just the other day speaking, when was it that you were the happiest in Krishna consciousness and didn't take much contemplation? When I was so happy to share what I was learning in Krishna consciousness with other people. And you know, in my assessment at least, in a mood of innocence, not in a mood of converting people, just in a mood of happily sharing something. It's joyful. And if that just sharing with others, that we say preaching Krishna consciousness, but just sharing the experience of Krishna consciousness with other people. There's a sense of fullness, and there's a sense, certainly a sense of absorption. You know, like recently what you all experienced with the Rath Yatra, and the same with introducing people to chanting japa. I mean, wow. And can that be recreated? I'm sure it can be recreated. So then comes the challenge of, okay, now those persons that were introduced to chanting japa, take them the next step and take, you know, so then it's a relationship, an ongoing relationship, and that's Krishna consciousness. Very exciting. Which then tells us, gee, we really need to go more deeply in Krishna, in our chanting, and so forth. So it's not just doing the behavior over and over again, it's going more deeply into that very activity and connecting with the sense of gratitude to Prabhupada and those representing Prabhupada that have given one this experience. The message, the teaching, the chanting, the experience. When feelings of gratitude are behind those recreating the experience, it's their attentiveness is there, and then you know, the submission, what was the phrase again? Everything is full of sense and logic, and the exchange of views between the master and disciple is possible only when the reception is submissive and real. And so you're the second time around question, Rupa Goswami has some terminology of different degrees of attentiveness and absorption. Does it apply? Yes. Thank you.